What's up out there? I'm John. I'm here with my friend Johnny.
What?
Another episode of Talk About That.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're here.
We are here. Johnny, we've been so consistent for so long now that people are beginning to write in about it.
Oh, write about the consistency?
Yeah. Huh. No, they're not. That's just me. I wanted to acknowledge
it. We heard
it.
That a long time ago. If you're going to do a podcast, you can't just halfway do it. You got to do it.
Right.
They got to know every Monday, I can count on you guys, even if it's bad. So we made it a point to put out
bad content every Monday.
Bad content, but it's reliable.
Well, the first year we were a little bit flakier.
We were.
Well, by we, I mean you.
Yeah.
But I hate to bring it up.
I'm sorry.
But you travel a lot.
You are the guy that keeps this going because if it was up to me.
Because I have nothing else.
Yeah.
Wait. No, go ahead. If it was up to you, what?
If it was up to me, it would be very scattershot for sure.
You think so?
You're the rock, John.
Is this where we need to unpack what's going on inside of you?
No.
So
there's too much. There's too much to unpack.
The case is too tightly stuffed.
I'm going to leave it there.
Yeah, we actually have a guest today. We're not going to say who it is.
No, we'll unveil.
But coming up later, we have a special guest.
Yeah, don't miss it, guys. If we've not impressed you so far, don't turn it off because you're going to love it.
Yeah, I was in a meeting yesterday and they were talking about how it was fascinating. We were talking about books and he was like,
ooh, books, that is fascinating. You're the worst.
But he said, my agent, who I love to death, Robert, he said, the thing about a book is one, it's like a $25 investment.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike a television show or even in church, you can sit through, if you don't like the preacher, you can sit through for like 45 minutes. Or if there's a show or a movie, if you don't like it in the first 2-3 minutes, you might stick with it to see. But if somebody picked up a book, like no one's going to know. If you don't grab in the first couple pages, no one's going to know. They're just going to put it down.
Yeah.
Like, you'll never know that they didn't.
That's true. But you just go, I sold a bunch of books, but you don't know if it's on the case. Like, we talked about the bookcase of books, and a lot of people haven't read all the books.
Yeah. He said, it's funny, he said, I have so many books that have a boarding pass on page 20. Like, if I go and find them on my shelf and open
that's
up.
That's where he gave up.
Yeah, he said, I was on the plane, and they lost me. They didn't catch me in 20 pages. I was done,
So,
man. Such a cool
I wonder
way.
If there's boarding passes on any of your books, John.
I don't know.
As it were. Proverbial boarding
well,
passes.
Well, most people don't print boarding passes anymore. So, how would you know?
I use the printed boarding pass.
Do you really?
Because I don't like the way that the digital thing holds up the line. Because it never is quite right. They have to move your phone. Is your brightness on high? It's a whole thing. So, I just go, here's my pass. I printed it.
Wow.
I didn't print it at home. I printed it there. I'm not wasting money.
Because you have to check luggage anyway.
I've checked luggage anyway.
So you might as well go and print it.
Because I don't ship any of my merch. I fly it all with me.
Can I ask you a very important question?
Yes.
Very pertinent to life and to
Please.
This conversation?
Yes.
When you go to the Nashville airport, do you always walk around by the United Airlines place to come through security? Because it's a shorter line?
Usually. But I'm pre-check. So
I am
the pre-check
too.
Line is usually short, too. But yes, the pre-check line, if it's a big day, yeah, I'll go around because it's always small.
Yeah, this
always
really small. Wasn't pertinent. I wanted to ask
you. You're right. It's a little travel tip if people didn't know.
Well, I don't want to tell them because then they're going to make the line longer for the rest of us.
Okay, keep doing what you're doing,
yeah,
people.
Just walk in that Southwest, that huge line.
Do what
line.
You do, you bunch of lemmings. Jeez. You're not helpful at all.
Oh, do you have clear?
No.
So
that's like the retinal scan.
Yes, it's a retinal / fingerprint.
And it works as a passport.
By
too,
the way, so don't slash your fingerprint.
Don't
it messes
slash
it all up.
It messes
yeah,
everything
blood
up.
Blood all over the machine.
I had mine removed so I could commit crimes.
That's good.
When you go overseas, I think it's like your passport too, right? So it's like, it's international. It's the thing about clear that's different. Than
is pre-check. It really?
Yes.
It was more expensive.
That's what I heard about it. It was like clear is good if you travel internationally because it's in all the international airports.
So I'm not sure what it is. I just know the lines are much shorter than TSA pre-check.
And they walk you through.
And here's what I don't know about pre-check. And I don't mean to sound like a traveling diva. I've been in a lot of airports
lately. You're so bougie today.
But I gotta ask this question.
Yes.
I see lots of people in pre-check line who obviously went through they paid money.
Yes.
They paid over $100.
It's $85 for 5 years.
My bad. Sorry. They paid almost.
Why would you impugn the character
almost.
Of TSA, our wonderful TSA employees?
Almost $100. They went and sat through an interview.
Yes.
Right? And so, but they're still there and they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Like they're still taking off their
belt. They're
still
taking off things.
And stuff.
It's like, sir, you just want to take off clothes.
It's like, hold on.
At this point, that's your own problem.
And I'm just, and I don't mean to be frustrated, but like we joined this club because all of us were going to be travelers. And we were going to go through faster.
I think it's adorable you think it's a club.
Than the non-travelers. We're going to do this so I can get through this faster.
In a club.
And instead people are still like, yeah. What do I do with my laptop?
Well, now some ladies and guys, they know like my boots have metal in them. They're going to set off the detector.
See, I don't think it's that.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be stereotypical. typical.
First of all, if you fly and you wear boots, you're doing it wrong.
Right,
I don't like
already.
The pajama people either.
Well,
that's too far over the spectrum.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle. Like, remember when flying used to be, you got dressed up, and of course they also smoked on the planes too.
Right.
But anyway, like, now we have people who just, like, they get in their jammies and bring, like, a shawl blanket over them, and they didn't even fix their hair.
Yeah, I see a lot of that.
But what I'm saying is, still dress for comfort. Don't be a pajama person, but don't wear boots with heels.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Here's the thing about boots, though. Sometimes the reason I might wear boots in the airport, there is a reason. Okay.
We're not talking cowboy boots, though, John.
I don't own cowboy boots. I might wear boots or my larger shoes because that way they didn't have to go and take up so much room in the suitcase. So I might wear the larger shoes or the heavier shoes on the flight.
This has been Travel Tips with John.
Wow. Hey, speaking of meetings, you want to hear the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life yesterday?
You had a meeting and said dumb things?
Before I do that, I'd like to throw shade at Dane Allen for a second.
This is the best story.
And we've told it on the podcast before, and I hope he's listening, but it is still the greatest story of all time.
It is. I want to somehow do it on stage because it's that funny.
It's so great. So back when I was managing Dane's band, it was called Skyhook back then, and we would go around and they put out some really great music. And so I was really trying to shop them to record labels and everything. And so since then, they have a record deal. They're a different name now. But we went to EMI, which was like a big deal. EMI is like, wow. So we went into EMI, and I coached these boys up, like, guys, you know, say this, appear this way, you know, answer this way. Here's how to answer it humbly, but also with it.
Because sometimes you freaked them out, though, is what you did.
Maybe a little bit.
You overcoached.
So he walked in. I mean, like, we were so ready, and we met the guy, and he walked in, and the guy goes, "Hey, my name's Brad." And Dane sticks out his hand, and he goes, "Hi, I'm Brad." And the guy goes, "Well, your name's Brad, too?" And Dane was like,
No.
I'm Dane. I don't know.
He just repeated what the guy said.
He did. He just, "Hey, dude, I'm Brad." Yeah.
"I'm Brad, too."
Yeah.
"We'll all be Brad."
And then we didn't get the deal. I don't know.
That's not the reason.
It wasn't, Dane. If you're listening, you did not tank everybody's career just because you called yourself by the wrong name. So don't feel
You know what? I'm the kind of person, if that happened to me, I would change my name to Brad just to avoid I'd be that embarrassed.
You're sitting in your chair on Google, like, looking up legal name change websites. Like,
Brad.
What do I have to submit to
I'm
make
Brad
this
from
stick?
Here on out.
Yeah. So, but Dane, my favorite part is that such a great story that to this day, Dane still turns red when you talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, it's still that.
I have stories like that.
It's fresh.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so I thought, in sensitivity to Dane,
you
we would
bring
put
it up
this
again.
Out over our huge listening audience.
You ever think about something embarrassing and it causes you to, like, go, oh, like, in real, you're thinking about it and it makes you literally audibly groan just the thought of it?
There is something I can't even tell that does that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know it already, but I can't tell what it is. So we'll talk
about it. Oh, I know which one it is. Yeah, I know that one.
Can't talk about it, but yes.
Can't talk about that. Okay. But tell me your embarrassing story from yesterday.
So I'm going to have to be vague and it's going to frustrate you.
Okay, sure.
Okay, so I'm sorry. So there was a meeting that came up this week, last second, and
Donald Trump.
It's a fairly high-profile...
Donald Trump.
It was not Donald Trump.
Okay.
It was a fairly high-profile, and I was going to go to, like, somebody's house, and it's a place, like, it was like, this is a cool, if nothing else, it's a cool meeting, whether or not a book ever comes of it or not. But so coming and talking about, you know, being somebody's possible collaborator... we have a long ways to go, no, like, guarantees, but just
a preliminary meeting,
you know, it's in downtown Nashville and it's a cool place that we're meeting at. And so we're sitting there and my wonderful agent is talking with this person who's very high profile and I don't get nervous. Johnny, I don't think I was nervous.
Yeah.
I mean, I speak for a living.
Yeah.
Sort of. I mean, it's not a very...
You speak.
I mean, I do. Speaking is a part of what I do in the living. How about that?
I'd say you're good at it.
I mean, I don't know. So, but words are probably important when one is speaking with someone else about helping to write their words.
Yes.
And so I felt like my mouth was really dry.
Oh, no.
This is one of those Brad kind of moments.
Cotton mouth.
And the guy asked me, well, how'd you get into this? You know, and so I have this whole thing I always talk about because it's the best way to explain it, that if you're going to travel to a foreign country and you had an interpreter, that there were certain phrases or expressions that, you know, like let's think of a common one here, Johnny, for that wouldn't translate word to word in the Spanish that we say that means something to us.
Oh, What do you mean?
Like, give me an expression, an American expression.
I don't know, like, that's something to hang your hat on.
There you go. If they just translated that, for us, that means, oh, that's something you could depend on. If you just put hang your hat on in Spanish, they'd be like, what are you talking about?
Mean? Right.
So what I wanted to say was, is there are common colloquialisms.
It's a big one. It's so, a lot of syllables
there. It was
the
first time I was talking with the person, I'm about three sentences in, and I'm telling you, it won't happen. I'm like, you know, like common colloquially.
Oh,
and
no.
It just,
colonialism.
Three or four times I try colloquially, and I finally just look at my agent and go, I can't say it. Like, I just can't. And he says, well, it's a good thing he's a writer and not a public speaker. And then I was like, except that I'm also a pastor and a public speaker. So basically I bombed, and who knows, I may not even get. Like, I don't bomb a lot. Look. And I don't think anybody laughed because they didn't want to laugh at me per se. I laughed. So then later on, I called my agent. I was like, look, I wanted to promise you that I properly know how to pronounce colloquialism. Like, I can do it. And he was like, oh, it was such a sweet.
You just couldn't do it in the moment. It's like the singing frog from the cartoon.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't do hello, my baby, hello, my honey, hello, my ragtime
guy. I couldn't do it. So I went on to say other words. I actually was able, the word foibles came into the conversation.
But I'm
so
saying,
that was a good one. But that's easy to say.
Did you find yourself trying to whip out a lot of 50 cent words after that to prove that you are a college educated person?
Maybe. No,
you overcompensate?
I think all I thought to myself was, is don't sound stupid anymore if possible. Like, from here on out, try to sound less stupid than you really are. So at that point.
Yeah, Brian Regan has a bit about that, about how he was standing with somebody and they were talking about art. And he knows nothing about art, but for some reason I said, I love art. And they were like, really? What are your favorite painters? And he goes, I couldn't say I don't know because I just released I love art like a flock of doves from my mouth. So he goes, I'm trapped. I'll be like, you know, he's going to make up painter's name. He goes, I know nothing about art.
Well, the possible author's wife asked me, who are my favorite authors, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a tough one, especially because I'm sitting in public service. So I started talking about a book that I'm not sure politically they're aligned with or not, you know? So then I thought of me.
Mein Kampf.
But you can't.
No, you didn't.
I like a guy
named... I love the flowery language in it.
You ever heard of Karl Marx? He's good. No, I was like, well, so then I was talking about reading Dallas Willard.
Yeah.
Try to just have like all the vast spectrum, but you can't just sit there and go, I don't know. Yeah. You know, you need to say something. You write
John,
books
don't
for
beat
a
yourself
living.
Up. I think you did fine. You nailed it. And we're going to hear back from that guy.
I don't know, man.
And if not, it's a great story to tell.
It is a great story. I immediately thought to myself, this is something I'm going to talk
about. Well, it's kind
podcast.
Of a good segue for our guest because we've talked about this before, but when comedians get together, you don't talk about how well you did. The funniest stuff is you're not going to believe how bad I ate it here, and here.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody just pulls up a chair. It's like it's like a seven-course meal is being sat in front of you. If somebody goes, hey, I just got Fallon, you're like, that guy got Fallon before me? But if they
jerk.
Go, I ate it, you go,
on
it.
Fallon.
Please
that's
Please bring it all. Yeah. No, I would feel bad if somebody that I knew ate it on Fallon.
Well,
I root for them once they get to the point, but I'm like, how did that guy get that? But it's, the bitterness is still in there festering. Anyway, today we have in studio with us one of my best friends of all time, and probably my best friend in comedy for real, Mr. Marty Simpson.
What's up, Marty?
That's awesome. That's digitized that he just said that. Because
I said it.
Whenever I introduce him or talk about him in other company, I'm always like, he's probably my best friend. And then... people give me a hard time. They're like, I never hear Johnny say that you're his best friend in comedy.
I don't claim you, but you claim me.
Yeah.
It does hurt. I'm sorry.
And so I've got notes I made on some of this stuff to talk about.
Oh, my gosh. Here we go. Marty makes notes.
Of stuff we've already talked about, you took notes?
Yeah, because I want to chime in on one thing here.
Oh.
Let me go to my notes.
We only talked for like 13 minutes. You couldn't just remember?
It was like a... No.
Are these critiques,
I'm
Marty?
In between medication, John.
Okay.
I didn't want to be right on my medication for y'all, because then y'all just would be like, hey, how's it going? How's it going, everybody? This is all right. Like, okay, so TSA PreCheck.
Yeah.
Let me give my little, like, 30 seconds worth.
Sure.
I get to the TSA PreCheck line, and if I have to go by the regular line, and it's like a line at the Disney Splash Mountain, whatever,
and you
like
have the fast
wrapped
pass.
About, right. I walk by that line, and I'm always thinking, these people. I literally
taking
like,
off their shoes like a bunch of schmucks.
I'm like, and then what you were referring to, the people who don't know what they're doing, they're the random
Yeah.
They got the they're trying to rope in people, so they didn't pay. They paid for their Priceline Spirit Airline ticket, didn't pay the $9 to check a bag in advance, whatever.
Yeah.
And then they just stamped a TSA pre-check thing on it to rope them in to try to get a
fingerprint. To advertise it. I think you're right. That's probably who these people are.
And then they're
in
there, like, taking their laptop out with their thing on, and I'm just like, ma'am, you don't need to do that. And they're just like, oh, no, this is... I'm just like, oh. Yeah. And then you get to the small airports that give you the yellow card. They don't have a true pre-check, but you get to cut the line, and then they're telling you, you have to take your laptop out. And I'm like, then I look at the TSA guy, and I'm like, these people. Like, it is the only time in my heart.
Right. You like, feel better
in
than.
In my heart, yeah. I am naturally opposed to them.
Yeah.
Why you would feel you not pay $17.50 a year? Yeah. If my daughter started lecturing me about how I should treat the general population at an airport, because that's what I call them, gin pop. If I had to treat them equally, I would be like, honey, don't talk to me about that. That's nonsense.
Yeah.
Like, I'm
right. You
like,
don't know enough to know what I've been through. I've seen some things.
That's right. I have. I'm like, you won't pay $17.50 a year to give your fingerprint to the government, wait 2 weeks, and get a piece of paper in the mail that lets you cut the line.
Well, you got to tell them you're not crazy. Yeah. You got to tell them that you're not. You've never been suicidal or whatever, right? Because they want to make sure you're not going to bring down the plane, I guess.
I don't remember the questions.
Oh, yeah, the questions are really
weird.
I'm not
sure if that's
all
good.
All you have to be is not crazy or willing to say you're not crazy.
Right. And have $85.
And not have doctor's reports on online to prove you're
that's
crazy.
That's true.
Isn't it really just about you're giving them the right to invade more of your privacy?
Yeah, it's the whole thing.
You're saying, check me out deeper than the average.
Do a deep dive.
What you're saying on paper is I give the right to the government to do what they've already done through our video cameras on our iPhone and
that's
know
true.
About us. We're just signing off on it.
Yeah. We were just talking about that before we rolled tape, before you got here, Marty. I bought these shoes 12 hours ago, right before Dick's Sporting Goods closed, right?
Well, anything you buy is on the internet. Boom.
But I'm saying, like, I paid with a card, and today on my Facebook, literally right as I was scrolling to get the notes for today's show, there was an ad for the shoes that I bought from Dick's Sporting Goods. A picture of them.
That's
crazy.
The one that is funny to me because
you just bought
paid the wrong person.
Yeah,
they're like they paid last week's trendy guy who knows the thing.
Somebody's
like,
asleep at the wheel. Maybe he wants a backup pair.
I can get you a flight from Denver, like in planes, trains, and automobiles.
Yeah,
like,
you're already home. They're like, would you like to go from Denver to Nashville? I just did.
Yeah, hold on. I've got the one for you on this. I'm looking for a picture from. I just sent it to my wife. We have a theory. Like, we've been saying some things.
To see if the ads follow you?
And we've been not saying things on purpose because we don't want the algorithm to hit us.
Yeah.
Like, off the record, of course, this is being recorded and released to hundreds of people, but my wife could possibly benefit from medicinal marijuana or a CBD oils or something like that. She's not at home getting high, but we don't want to say marijuana in our house.
Right.
And then we get bong ads in our algorithm and stuff like that. And our kids are, like, seeing the iPad like, Dad, this is a bong ad. What's going on? But so we went to Hawaii. My wife, her second grade school class are the Sea Turtles,
right.
Miss Simpson's Sea Turtles. And we're dog lovers, golden doodles all through my house. This is the most recent ad in my Instagram ad, and it is a T-shirt ad that says, once upon a time, there was a girl who really loved dogs and turtles.
Wow.
There is a T-shirt that has dogs and sea turtles on it while we were in Hawaii swimming with sea turtles.
Mm.
That showed up in my Instagram.
So here's the real question. Did you buy it?
Definitely.
It's on its way.
So it worked.
We did the overnight shipping.
It's a great shirt. You should see it.
Okay, so Marty, we need to get into this because we started comedy the same year together, but in separate areas, and we met at a conference.
Like a month apart, even. Or like
apart. And we met at a conference for Christian comedy called the Christian Comedy Association.
And actually, I'm going to back it up and say we started in the same city because my first set was in Zany's Nashville.
Was it really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. Oh, that's right. For
Last Comic Standing audition. Yeah, so we started in Nashville.
Dude, that's really weird.
So go ahead.
I forgot about that.
Go ahead, I interrupted.
So now, fast forward 10 years, 11 years, Marty is now vice president of that organization.
Wow.
That was the plan.
It's prestigious.
It's a long con.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I always say about Marty. It's like there's this movie called Leap of Faith, where Steve Martin was a faith healer, but he was a charlatan, and he would go town to town and set up his little tent revivals.
This is a horrible setup for whatever you say about Marty.
but
he was a charlatan.
Speaking of charlatan.
But there's a line in that movie that I always think of, and it is that somebody says, like, he goes, you're a con man. And then he's to Deborah Winger, character says that to him. He goes, con men are sneaky. I'm obvious. Marty's obvious. And that's what I love about him. He's like so honest. He's not a con man. I'm saying.
That's the G version. That's of the real G version.
Marty's like, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's what I'm saying is like, I Marty's always been that guy that, I mean, even early on when we were just becoming friends, I mean, I remember 2 years in, I'd been doing my show and I was starting to get a lot of breaks and I was doing well and I was doing hour long shows by then. And then Marty go, one time I had a conversation with you and you said, well, your show is so impressive and it's amazing. But at the end of my show, I feel like my audience knows me. And at the end of your show, I just feel like I've been impressed. And it kind of hit me in the chest. And I was like, God, that was kind of hurtful. And I started
thinking.
What's
funny is the comedian, and people hear that as a compliment out on the street, but as a comedian, you're like.
Yeah, I was like, oh. I want both.
Right.
And
right,
I started trying to figure out a way after you told me that to find both in my show. So it was the right thing. That's what I'm saying. That's what I mean by that. I mean, it's like, you're not going to pull a punch, and it's good. It's the best part of your personality to me.
Oh, well, thanks, man.
But anyway, it changed the way I started thinking. I need to figure out a way to be more vulnerable because I'm hiding behind these punchlines in a way. And so I did. I started talking about awkward gym class stuff, and, mm-hmm. and now my whole show is almost that.
Oh, yeah. I've seen your show. It's very awkward.
It's
I think in the same conversation, John, that same conversation, he was probably down in Columbia. I think there was a documentary being filmed. I called you to come be in the documentary,
yeah,
and
yeah.
You were opening for me, which is normally I would be opening for Johnny, but he was opening for me. And I said, hey, don't do any of that show-stopping crap before I get up there, okay? Just do some stand-up, be mm-hmm. funny.
And I go, yeah, Marty thinks I'm show-stopping. And you go, it's not a compliment.
We can all play a few chords and get a standing ovation, Johnny.
It means don't make me follow your weird applause break for your song, because I'm just going to get up here and talk, and you're going to make me look like a schmo.
Yeah,
no, I do appreciate Marty's honesty. Marty and I have talked about doing some writing together. And you want to tell him, this was his pitch to me when he called me. Go ahead and give him the pitch. This was the pitch.
I don't even remember, but I'm going to agree with what you say.
You basically said, listen, I want to let you know something. You should have zero expectations about me. There's a good chance I won't follow through, and that won't be your fault. Like, this is going to be all my fault when it doesn't work. And, like, you spent about 20 minutes, and by the end, it was awesome. I was like, this is great. Like,
the most believable part of that is
trying to talk me out of doing this book.
Yeah. Yes, the most believable part of that is, like, you spent about 20 minutes talking about yourself.
He was like, no, I appreciate it. He's like, you're going to give me this homework, and if I don't come back, that's on me, you know, with it. And
I was like, okay. I was like, I can only work with you, John Driver, if you're the prince of a fellow that Johnny W. says you are, and you will like me after I let you down.
Because I will let you down.
Because this is going to happen.
And it did not let me down.
We're still 5 years into this book, right?
When
did I meet with you? John Driver sent me this Word document of like every perfect thing for me to go do.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, yeah, it is not God's will for me to write a book.
That's a big list.
This is awful.
Well, but honestly, truthfully, and John and I do this too, and I'll make a case for this, and comedians have definitely shown me this, but even before I became a comedian, John and I, we bust each other's chops. We were in a band together, and that's just kind of our deal, and that's kind of how we know we're okay.
Yeah.
And John, we talked about how you make yourself this easy target, and that's part of there's this weird give and take to our relationship. But Marty's definitely that, you know, and other comedians I've met, like, if somebody's not busting your chops, you should be worried as a comic.
Right.
That you're not connecting or something's wrong. You're on the outside of the group in a way. And so, like, my favorite Pastor Roy story, Pastor Roy, children's pastor here, and this is, I think of every time when I think of Pastor Roy, I think of this story. My wife lost her job. We'd lived here for 2 years. She lost her job. They laid her off and told Wage and Hour, with the commission that gives unemployment, that she quit. And they did not fire her for cause. There was no, and so we couldn't draw unemployment. They lied. It was a really dark time. I had just started doing comedy, and I was part-time here. And I was like, what do I do? And it was this weird crossroads for us, because she wasn't even going to get unemployment. So we floated along for 6 months that way, and it was such a strange time. But I remember, like, the second or third week into that, I was really dealing with it. And we used to all go out for lunch as a staff. And Roy goes, hey, let's go out to lunch after staff. And I go, man, I don't know. It's tight. And then we went out to lunch. He goes, no, I'll pay. My wife's got a job. I got so tickled when he said it, because it's like the most inappropriate thing to say. But the way he said it was just like so funny.
Okay, I just had a flashback. And I don't know if it was you or not. And it may have been you. So my fiance at the time had a brain aneurysm.
Oh, okay? Right. Yeah, yeah.
Was this you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And we're in the hospital. And so, like, I'm thinking she's about to have surgery. Like, I didn't know if she's going to be alive or dead when I got there. Like, it was a big moment in life, and tension is high. But to your point,
literally,
it made life so much. Yeah, it made life so much better. Johnny came to visit in the hospital in a few days, and he walked in, and we're all in the and you know, we weren't just like all in tears or whatever. But you know, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Johnny walks in and goes, "What?" He said, "What's everybody so down about? It's not like it's brain surgery." Like, he just dropped
it. I don't even know why I said it. Like, I cringe thinking about what kind of person.
That's the most Marty-like thing Johnny's ever said in his life.
But it broke the room open. They all just busted out. Right, yeah, right. It was like the tension.
We needed it. Like, we needed, like, just a moment to be like, okay, you know. I mean, even though, well, in retrospect, that it all worked out. I think it's okay.
That's true. If it had not worked out, I'd be like, that jerk came in.
But I remember Lars' dad even. Like, I think that was a good thing for him, especially. Like,
well, he's still friendly to me, so he obviously wasn't deeply offended by it. But to that point, my favorite Marty story is, and this kind of sums up my entire relationship with him, honestly, his personality and the reason I love him.
So, repeat that part. Just repeat that part for people.
So this is true. This is true. So I get this opportunity to open for Tim Hawkins in April of 2012. Yeah. It leads to, because the weekend went so well, they go, "We want you to come be a part of Tim's taping. He's taping his new DVD, and we want you to get 15 minutes on tape." We go down. I get tape. That went really well. So they said, "Do another 10 minutes the next night." So by the end of it, we had this little 30-minute DVD they were going to put out. And I'm freaking out, like, oh my gosh, I got this accidental DVD. It was a totally unplanned thing. And now we're waiting for the cuts to come back. Did anything mess up? Because we have no margin for error. 30 minutes is like the bare minimum for a project. It was going to be my old $10 DVD. So I'm like freaking out. Over the camera angles, right? Did everything work? So they start sending me clips. And then they sent me the full, all the camera cuts weren't done, but this is it. We've got a private YouTube link for you to look at, Johnny. And the first thing I did, honestly, because Marty was the guy who was kind of celebrating with me, and it's very hard to find in comedy when you start rising a little bit or you get a break, it's hard to find somebody who will celebrate with you.
Right.
Because they're always like, "How'd you get that?" And it's a very competitive thing without meaning to be, but it just is. I sent Marty the clip. I go, "I'm going to watch this now. I want you to watch it with me." Because I wanted him to give me his real-time reaction as I watched it. And that's just, that just shows how much I trust him. So I'd already started watching it. About 5 minutes in, I haven't got a text back from Marty. And then he goes, "I'm watching now. You look huge." And I go, and like my heart kind of sank. I go, "What?" He goes, "I'm just kidding. I hadn't hit play yet."
I'm getting teared up over here laughing about the memory of that.
That's the funniest thing. That's his Roy, Pastor Roy, my wife's got a job story.
Oh my gosh. I was lying on my couch holding the phone above my face like I was watching TV. I got the link, and I probably leaned up and said, "Ashley, I'm going to watch this Johnny W thing. I got to get to it." And she's like, "Let's finish this show." And so I just waited. I waited 5 or 10 minutes on purpose because I wanted it to be like, I'm
in it.
It's so
diabolical.
It is diabolical.
Well, I knew that he was going to be like, "Oh, I hope the first couple jokes sound good."
Yeah, yeah.
The editing. Because to piece three sets together to make one DVD, he had three closers, three openers. Like, that's kind of what he wanted me to look. Can this be a finished project from a third party, unbiased standpoint? So I knew he was like pins and needles. And I just was like, "You look huge." And then I almost stuck with it longer.
That's the funniest thing. But then, this is true. This is like the soft ending is an hour later, he calls me and goes, "Dude, it's so good." He goes, and when one of the songs that I closed on, he goes, "When that song came on and I saw how good it was," he goes, "I started tearing up."
I did.
Like, I would never admit that. In fact, I bet Marty wished he could take it back.
No. That's the most masculine thing you can do is to
no,
be
it's
vulnerable.
Great. But it was like he literally like was celebrating with me. And that's one of the things when I think about Marty. I think about that moment. And I'm like, yeah, Marty's in my camp.
Well, you know, I think everything that we talk about in life, we need people who are willing, even if it wasn't your gain. You know what I'm saying, Marty?
Right.
Like, you didn't win because that happened. You won nothing. In fact, if you want to look at it, in some ways, you lost because the way we all think about
it. Oh, it's zero sum.
Yeah, because I had been on Tim Hawkins' bus of 6 months earlier.
Yeah.
And then Johnny.
And now Johnny's got the gig.
Swooped in with his guitar.
Oh, no.
people
he's
think
guitar
his guitar and New Balance.
I think
no, but it was no gang. You're right.
Dave Ramsey wrote a book called Legacy. Looking over there, Legacy Journey or something, and in it, one of the things he said that really stuck with me. Everything that stuck with me in the books, he said that people think about money in the world like it's a pie, as if that there is a finite amount of it.
Yeah.
And so you begin to think that if somebody else has some, then that took some away from you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's sort of that way. And I think we think about that with success as well, yeah. or with our life, is that if somebody else did well, that's just that was the slot that could have been mine, you know. So it speaks to that feeling, and I think that goes even back to faith. Like, is it possible that if I do believe my steps are ordered, if I commit my way, I thought about that scripture this morning, commit your works to the Lord and your plans will be established, is yeah. what it says in Proverbs. Like, if I believe my plans or my ways are established because of that committing, then it does. It feels like when somebody else gets that opportunity that it was taken away from me. So when you can have the wherewithal, I mean, we're really heaping high praise right now.
Marty.
But I'm saying it's such
a...
Saint
it's a
beautiful.
Marty.
Yeah, you're used to it.
I'm used to it. you should see my inbox, John.
But it's beautiful because, like, that's what doesn't just build friendships. That's what builds people. Like, that's what builds us up, edifies. Is that word?
I actually have a heaping high praise folder that I drag them to. No, I think that it goes back even the emotional, the method acting of that, like, meaning the reason. That hearing arteries, I actually get emotional hearing the Five for Fighting song on the radio.
Yeah,
the parody.
The parody was
that up. Note. Yeah. Is it Five for Fighting?
Yeah,
yeah. Like, because don't tell me the lines because I want to quote it. I'm hearing you're hearing me gurgle and you're hearing me wheeze.
Something.
Your body's got pizza sauce pumping through my arteries.
Yeah.
Your arteries.
Marty, your singing voice is wonderful.
Horrible, right?
No, it's wonderful.
But we had a conversation about that, about the Hanukkah song, and about how he was doing it to a track.
Yeah.
And the first time we did it, and then I kind of said, like, you need to have the guitar in your hand instead of the track so you can milk those laughs because you're a talented stand-up comic. Like, that makes the difference in it being a track. And so seeing you do it with the guitar, this is going to be a little bit of – I'm going to take back some of the high praise for y'all and go egotistical here.
Because you saw your influence in it.
Well, right. But I was having this conversation the other day. I don't think I'm a coach because somebody paid me to coach a team. I think that I grew up naturally enjoying – the imparting of something, like like coming over the top, like giving your opinion. You're paid to give your opinion as a coach, but that's why these life coaches and stuff I think are kind of creepy, because it's like about money. To me, I love working with another comic, not because my tag is in his show, but just because I feel like his show is better because of what my input was. So I don't even. I love being on the sideline and seeing that preparation, everything come together. So when you came to the Clean Comedy Challenge and then got off stage and won, I ran over there and literally hit his rear end like a football coach would. I chest bumped me, but I also slapped the very violently, like you would if he ran a 60-yard touchdown.
In a bar, mind you.
Yeah. Like, I'm saying, I was so fired up. Because I didn't make the finals. I was angry at the people who did make the finals. And if they beat Johnny, I was going to be even more angry.
Yeah.
So he went into the finals and threw the gauntlet down. Like, he didn't win the Kentucky Derby like the disqualified second place guy. He was like secretariat, like 100 links out ahead.
I like this. Like, I like the way this makes me sound.
Clydesdale.
I
know.
I'm a Clydesdale horse.
And at this point, Curry thought I was arrogant and egotistical because the other one, this is my favorite one.
Oh.
When you said, I think I'm going to do my song parodies in the finals.
Yeah.
I was like, what did I say?
I thought I would do music.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had one bit that wasn't a parody.
And I said right in front of Curry at lunch, and she hadn't met me, I was like, can we get that in writing?
Yeah, he was like encouraging me to do it, and Curry was like, "Who's this clown?"
Yeah, but I was just busting
like
his
daring
chops,
me to
like,
do it.
You're gonna do parodies in the finals, okay? Can we get that in writing? But in my mind, I was like, maybe I could give him some insecurities about it, and he won't sing in the finals, so I still have a shot.
Hey, but, so do you you can just not listen, Johnny, to this because you're not gonna like it.
Oh dear!
But do you have any knowledge of the Enneagram?
Yes.
Do you know what your number is? Does it happen to be a 2?
I know
to
start making
two?
Fun of you right now.
Okay, that's it? You don't
no,
know if
I'm
you're...
Okay. No, here's what I will tell you. I have taken the
Myers-Briggs or whatever.
No. I definitely Myers-Briggs, but I'm color code. I'm devoted to the color code, which is kind of like before Enneagram got big, and the Enneagram got big a couple years ago. But you told me about it when we were doing the book deal.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's a paid test that's like an hour long that you take, right? I've taken the Facebook ad, find out which number you are, and I am, I think, an adventurer seven, four, and five. I think are the ones.
Okay, well, some of that helper, some of that way that, excuse me, guys, some of that, like, how you rejoice as much in the victories of others. Some of that sounds like a two, like a helper, but
you sound so disappointed that it didn't line up.
I wanted to be right. I wanted to be right. So,
but I might have been if I'd have taken the full. The little 40 question test might have not had the
four.
Thorough.
Four actually would work for a lot of things because it's a.
I don't remember. Adventurer is the one that, like, I'm a play. I'm
seven.
Like, rule one is have fun.
Then, like, you're a seven. Yeah.
Yeah, but along the way, but also the thing that's frustrating about Myers-Briggs and the color code and the Enneagram, I'm always four or five things. I was a drama teacher, a football coach, a comedian, a coder. I write HTML code.
Yeah.
Like, I have too many things that I do.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating. I would rather just be like the two.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think you look at where you dream. Like, because again, I'm like that. I'm an executive pastor. So, like, I'm doing all this spreadsheet type work. You know, I'm very, like, organized in a manuscript, those kind of things. But I'm also a songwriter. Or thinking artistically, and you got to think of, so I'm kind of left and right brain a little bit in that respect, which I think is just clinical insanity, to be honest with you. But in that, I think that if you really want to try to break it down, like, where do you feel most like yourself, or where could, like, okay, if I had my druthers, if money wasn't an issue, if it's not just what you do, but where do I feel most alive in that? And so I would say, for a guy, writing or comedy, you know, someone said that something the other day about a contract or something. I was like, look, you do not get into writing for money. You don't get into comedy for money. If money comes, that's great. And you'll be surprised by it. If you really love it, you'll be shocked that somebody would pay you to do this. You know, so that kind of lets me know, I think, where I light a little bit, because money or no money, I was already doing this. You know,
Right. I told, like, people this week at the Clean Comedy Challenge, if you can quit comedy, you should quit.
Yeah,
like, if you're capable of not doing it, you should not do it.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, some of them were really capable of not doing it while they were on stage. But the,
I'll show you how not able I am.
I remember this. Maybe I'm a two if I retook the test, because I remember at my school where I worked, I would put on the school play in the spring, work hours, endlessly hours. And they would love the play. And it was a Christian school, and they never had plays before. And I loved it. And then the fall would roll around, and we would have football season, and I would love that. But I remember after we were the lowest seed, we were the Cinderella story of our season one year.
Yeah.
We had lost 44-6 to the team that was the one seed 4 weeks earlier.
Wow.
But my best player had been injured, and I knew he wasn't in. And we were losing 16-6 in the fourth quarter, and I pulled all my starters on purpose so we would get blown out, and I almost got fired. But I was, like, shaving points. So when we played these high school kids 4 weeks later, when I knew we were going to rebound and have to play them in the playoffs, they wouldn't take us seriously. And we beat them 27-7 in the rematch. And I rolled over when I was getting in bed, and I said to my wife, Ashley, remind me at some point in my life, this is what I love. This is the one that I love. This is the feeling that I want the most and want to repeat. And then quit like a year later. And but I remember saying that out loud.
Tell the story, Marty, about the speech, the locker room speech. That's one of my favorite things.
I kind of just...
No, but I'm saying that you go, they're going to call this the beginning.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
So we went to that game, put us in the state championship, the one we won. And so then, and we had no business being there. We were definitely the what was the team this year? Or we were Wofford.
Yeah.
Like, we were like the Wofford team, you know. And so we lost the state championship 24-14, but it was 17-14 late in the game. We had a chance to win. And a kid that just asked to be my Facebook friend 5 years ago, and I still haven't said yes. snapped the ball over the quarterback's head on first and goal out of the 50-yard line. Same kid came over at halftime and said, Coach, everybody's swearing and using foul language in the huddle, and I don't think God is going to honor our efforts in the second half if we all are using all that foul language. I think if we had more Christ-like attitude, we would win. I'm like, how about a Christ-like snap? Can we get a... Can we get a Christ-like shotgun snap to the quarterback's hands? I think Jesus would have snapped the ball right to the quarterback's hands. And we lost, and I got 600 people all gathered around, and I said, you know, nobody thought we were going to be here, and this is we've done something special here, and I don't want y'all to remember this day as as the day we lost the state championship. I'm going to claim today and name today in the football history of our school, today is the beginning. And like, you know, steam was coming off the pads of the cheer, of the football players. Cheerleaders were crying. Parents got teared up. I was like, it's the beginning. It was probably the coolest speech I'd ever given. And people are like, well, what did y'all go on to do? I was like, we had a losing season next year and I quit. But I mean, that was an amazing speech. And people talk about that speech still. Like,
the beginning.
And it was. And they haven't had a winning record since. So my narcissistic coach was like, yeah,
it was the beginning of the end. That's what it was.
Right, right. No, they actually won the state championship about 6 years ago. And I've been gone about 15 years.
So Marty was a highly touted high school football player as a kicker, punter, and played 4 years. Started at South Carolina.
Did he make you angry when he said kicker instead of punter?
He was kicker and punter.
I was both.
He was both.
Never mind then.
So, yeah, to a player. So, Marty played all 4 years at South Carolina. These are like, he came in when South Carolina became an SEC school. So the trivia question for Marty is, he scored the first 6 points in the SEC for South Carolina.
Wow.
And you have to word it that way. Who scored the first 6 points? Because then everybody will think it's a touchdown.
Right.
And I'm like, no, I kicked 2 field goals to go up 6-0 against Georgia in 1992. We went on to lose that one 28-6. But.
Yeah. So you were there for Lou Holtz?
No.
That was before
Sparky
Lou.
Woods.
Sparky
and
Woods.
Brad Scott. Brad yes. Scott was offensive coordinator when FSU won the national championship in 93 with Charlie Ward, was the hot new name. So Sparky got fired.
Yeah,
but so 92, we beat University. Here's a trivia question for you too.
Here we go.
Question to you, with your orange laptop staring at me with your big framed picture of the
go
stadium
balls.
Behind you.
Yeah,
the something worth knowing: since South Carolina has entered the SEC, there was a trend that every time we beat Tennessee, Tennessee fired their coach.
That's true.
It's like the board of directors were like, this is the line that we're drawing in the sand. If we lose to the Gamecocks, fire the coach.
Yeah.
We fired Majors, former.
I got Johnny Majors fired. Is there a bigger famous football alumni than Johnny Majors in
huge.
The 90s?
Yeah.
It's an amazing YouTube clip that you can find if you Google Marty Simpson, Tennessee. We beat them to make it 24-23, and I had to punt out of the end zone and had like a 60-yard punt that Mose Phillips ended up doing some stuff with. It was fun. But I kicked a field goal to tie it in the fourth quarter and kicked the extra point that made it 24-23. And that's what we all sang at the end, was like our band played Rocky Top. And
we all played
Rocky Top, you'll always be home sweet home to me, 24-23. And we were like chanting it at Johnny Majors when he ran off. And he throws his clipboard down and puts his thing down when we stop the two-point conversion. I'll give him credit. Heath Shuler got the comeback, and they scored, and then went for two to win it with no overtime. So that was gutsy.
And we stuffed them.
And so he could have kicked the point. They went 9-3.
Yeah.
He could have kicked the point and not lost.
Well, back then there was no overtime rule, so it could have ended up in a tie or something, right?
It would have been a tie. It just would have been a tie.
Yeah.
And so he went for two, and we stuffed him, and it was awesome. And
we fired the coach.
And it was on Halloween, so all of our fans were dressed up in costumes, and they were filming the movie The Program in our stadium.
Right.
So at halftime, they did all these shenanigan plays that were filmed at halftime. So the entire stadium was in costume on Halloween. And it was just like all of the highlights, they cut to the stands and people are in goth makeup.
That's weird.
Weird, like Mary Poppins is in the stands behind the uprights. Like,
I forgot about the program being filmed there. Didn't you say that you went into your, like it was your locker room that the football players trained in?
100%.
And they had the fake weights that they would use for the movie. So he's pushing, and it looks like Marty's just, if Instagram was around back then, bro, you'd have been viral.
Because if you're doing 415 or whatever, like 445s on either side is what? 91, 83, 60, 405. 405 is the number.
Yeah.
The bar bends.
Yeah.
What you're doing for the bar bends a little bit.
Yeah.
But I was like, ping, 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 ping. It was just like, it was like 135.
They're like lead or whatever.
Pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. And James Conn was working out. I got to spot him. I was like, Sonny, I'll spot you. And I said, is this movie going to be good? He was like, no, this is a garbage piece of trash my agent made me take. That was literally what he said. And then U2 was in the stadium too. And I got to work out with Bono.
What?
Yeah.
I don't know this story.
Yeah, I spotted Bono and he was like, are you the unfortunate lad who missed the kick on Saturday?
Oh, no.
Yeah,
and were you?
Winning field goal. Yeah, I kicked 4 field goals against East Carolina to make it 20-18, and on the last play of the game, I missed a kick like 45 degrees to the right that landed in the band, and we lost. And they asked me afterwards. They're like, in the interview, they're like, "What were you thinking when you saw the ball go way over there to the right?" I was like, "That I should have kicked it way more to the left. Isn't that what everybody was thinking? Like right when it happened. But Bono was like, "Are you the unfortunate lad?" I was like, "Oh man,
I've never heard this."
Yeah.
First of all, Bono was lifting weights.
Yeah,
he was working out.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's why he's still so in shape.
Was he lifting the fake weights or the real ones?
It was the same year because we had the Rolling Stones and U2 and the program all in our stadium in the same 5 months or whatever, and they just were in there because it's kind of like. Like, Darius Rucker went to South Carolina, and he was like, oh, it's a pleasure to meet Marty Simpson, the kicker.
Right.
But I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's Hootie.
Right.
You know, and but Bono, it's like, it's charming to meet these college football players. So they're in there to meet the linebackers and the physique guys, and then the kicker walks in and can speak English. And like, you know, so it's like, I'm a spokesman. Like,
you're named and end in Itsky.
Yeah, but also for the guys like Bono and them, soccer is the game, so the kicker is interesting. So they would be out in the stands.
Uh-huh.
Doing the sound check, and I'm kicking at the other end of the field sometimes. Like, that would happen and stuff. So this will probably all get edited out.
I never knew you had a Bono story. I'm a huge U2 guy, so that's great.
Yeah, no, I am too. I slept out on the concrete for the concert ticket.
Oh, that's the best. U2.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good enough story that, like, we could do a book about you and call it The Unfortunate Lad.
Oh,
like, you know what I'm saying?
That's a very sympathetic figure we can make
it
you.
It needs to have a small stage direction at the top that says, read in Irish accent. The Unfortunate Lad. Am I bugging you?
I don't mean to bug you. Yeah.
Well, that's fascinating. So, is there any other shot?
I think my meds kicked in the middle somewhere in that.
No, it's perfect.
Any other shots you want to take at Tennessee here?
But let me go back. So, Johnny Majors gets fired in 92. Then in 2003, Lou Holtz beat him, and they fired Philip Fulmer.
Yeah.
And then 4 years later, we beat him, and they're like, Dooley, get out.
Mm-hmm.
Or Lane Kiffin. I think it was Kiffin and
Dooley. No, Kiffin was like one year.
Kiffin quit on his own.
Well, we beat Kiffin, but I'm saying we beat him.
Yeah.
We beat him, and then we beat Dooley. The year he was like, no matter what happens around Tennessee, we'll still kick the out of Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt beats us pretty regularly.
So I'm saying, I think there's only one time since we've been in the SEC that South Carolina beat Tennessee and they renewed the contract of the coach. I think it's only been once.
What does that say about our opinion of South Carolina? Like, you're right.
That y'all are delusional.
That is
because they surpassed y'all in football like 20 years ago.
I don't really, that's going to be
a
strong
memory from the 70s in Tennessee, people. The Peyton Manning.
How about 98?
You know,
T. Martin. That's
you
good.
Know, we won the East in 2006.
Yeah, we won the East once. So y'all have a better history than we do, for sure.
Wait, is that right, John, in 2006?
I don't know, John. You know more about this. You got the picture on the wall.
Okay, hold on. Fulmer was fired in 2007, and he won the East the year before he was fired.
Yeah.
So,
and then he went like 7-9 or whatever.
T. Martin actually set the NCAA record for completions in a row at Williams-Brice Stadium. Mm-hmm. I was at the game. The first incompletion in the fourth quarter, he got a standing ovation from the Gamecock fans. Like, yay!
Yeah, that was No, Tennessee football has fallen really, really far. And I don't know.
I think Peyton Manning's forehead took it with him.
Okay. It fits.
I'm saying
our legacy fit on his forehead.
There was enough left for T. Martin to win it as he
the
left.
Momentum.
And then it like made the sound when he got his forehead all the way out of the university.
Are you a Muschamp fan?
Here's what I think.
Wow, that says it all. Like the answer, like your hesitation and...
I'm glad we didn't hire Tom Herman.
Okay.
I wanted Tom Herman big time, and he used us to get his Texas contract, the Houston contract higher.
Yeah.
But then he ends up being a jerk. But he did turn Texas around, but he's a jerk. I think Will Muschamp knows his defense, and I think he knows the illegal recruiting ways of Alabama and Texas to avoid all the NCAA violations. So I like that we're getting some five-star guys.
A glowing recommendation.
So, I just think the whole screaming and hollering and blow your gasket thing, like,
it's a bit
much. I think trading Jesus for recruits is more effective. Dabo has proven that. And so lying to the kids about the Jesus influence to the moms and stuff, I think that's the way to go.
That's the other thing you need to know is like...
Oh, he hates Clemson.
Yeah, they hate each other. It's crazy.
But
it's intense.
I ended the balloons at Clemson.
Yeah.
I single-handedly ended the balloon.
We talked about it on the podcast.
You know, I know the guy.
Marty's balloon video.
I know the guy who started the balloons. You know that.
Right. Well, tell him I said hi. Death from above.
I told you about that. Marty made a video called Death from Above about, are these balloons killing wildlife? And he would interview people out front of the stadium and try to get the questions to trip them up. And then
No, I did not edge the question. I said, what do you think of the balloons? You're like, we love the balloons. I was like, what do you think of the environmental thing? They're like, we don't care.
Right. And then he's like, but should we care? And then he would show, like, where are these balloons landing? And so he told me when he was doing it, he goes, dude, I just stopped. There's a dead deer on the side of the road.
Driving.
He goes, I'm tying some of these balloons around his neck for this video. And
I will not corroborate that statement. We found that deer dead with balloons where he was. And that's all.
My only contribution to that video was I said, there's a screenshot you should use, Ken Burns it, of the polar bear on the single ice floe. I said, you got to use that 100%. Where there's a balloon next to him.
And then that made me download four or five other nature things, like in Australia, the balloons were fun. But so then a lady from Australia filming a documentary about the, like, balloons from America have been tracked to Australian waters. From all events, any balloon release, there's like noballoonrelease.com people like out there. She was like, you have the best footage of the rampaging attitude of Americans towards. I was like, you cannot use my footage.
Yeah,
that's
it's
what you're
all
calling
satirical.
Like, I'm not. This is a satire. Like, I didn't do any study.
Didn't you have some coming out the blowhole of a whale? Like balloons were slowly.
Yeah. And I definitely had a Johnny W. influence joke of a wordplay when I'm standing over the deer that we found there dead with balloons tied to it. I will not corroborate any of things that Johnny has said in this thing. And I said the question that this deer is asking is why now, why here, why today? And the simple answer is, because Clemson played at home this week. And I'm like, the only thing left to say is, oh dear.
Yeah, of course.
And then Amazing Grace starts playing on the bagpipe.
Not now, not like this.
Oh, no, and I'm in the bus. I'm at the bus, leaning the microphone over like I'm like have press credentials, yelling at them when they're running out for 5 seconds before the balloons go up, yelling, is anybody here going to do anything about this balloons? I'm like yelling it into the thing. And I'm like, I want answers. Are y'all going to be any more effective at stopping this balloons than you are at Georgia Tech's triple option? And then the balloons release, and I'm like, oh, the humanity. It's like that is my all-time favorite thing that I've ever
produced.
But it
stopped, right? They don't do anymore, right?
Correct. 2 years later.
Wow.
Because here's what I found. The Clemson is the agricultural school in the country. I mean, they're well respect agriculture. They studied it, and they published a PDF in like 1996 that they did a five-year
environmental study
that latex balloons degrade naturally in nature at the same rate as oak leaves, and therefore they're just adding oak leaves to the ecosystem in terms of the thing. Oak leaves take 35 years to degrade into the soil that they land on.
Yeah.
So they literally just, like, Danny Ford was like, hey, man, we're still doing the balloons. We need a study done.
Oak leaves.
Clemson Tom tweeted for like 4 months, I blame Marty Simpson.
Yeah, he's got a rival named Clemson Tom who has a channel there, a YouTube channel, and he's like a folk hero there. But it's all in, you know, social media. So they challenged each other. And
it'd be like something you can do if y'all ever beat Alabama.
Hey. Wow. You cut me deep. Look, I'm just really I'm just waiting on Saban.
Waiting on Saban to retire.
March Madness this year was a big time for y'all.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying I respect any good round in March Madness.
No.
Did you see Grant Williams got flagrant fouls last night and your boy Grayson Allen? Your favorite. He got kicked out of the game. It was a summer league game.
Oh, that's a shocker.
Okay.
He literally just clobbered Grant in the back of the head for no reason. Didn't even go for the ball.
I've cried as an adult.
And they kicked him out of a summer league game.
I've cried as an adult in the last 10 years twice. When Johnny W's DVD story and when South Carolina beat Duke in the
that was amazing.
32.
Oh, my gosh. It was amazing.
Krzyzewski was like, don't foul. Don't foul. I was just like,
it was amazing. Although I'm not a fan of Frank Martin.
If you knew him and were on the inside, you would love him.
Really? It's just again, same kind of thing you were talking about, Muschamp. Like,
he's a shouty guy.
All I see him do is just absolutely berate the players, you know. But
and apparently it works. Members.
Like, I would take a national championship.
No, but here's why you'll love Frank Martin, because all of his players come back and attribute all of their success to the time they had with him. Yeah. Nobody is writing the expose article on how Frank
Nobody's
Martin
doing the Bobby Knight strangle.
He's not a Bobby Knight kind of.
Right. Well, maybe, but I'm saying.
One kid, softy.
They call him Frank. They literally say, they call him Frank behind the scenes.
That's the name of his book, isn't it? Call Me Frank?
Call Me Frank.
The problem with Frank Martin at South Carolina was Darren Horn ran the program into the ground, so 800 people were in the CLA to see 21,000. So you just hear this big guy, like a Latino guy. What is it? Puerto, I mean, he's Cuban, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And he is just, what the? And it's just echoing there's nobody like to a diffuse. Middle school referee would be doing.
No one to diffuse his shouting.
Oh, my gosh. She is on contract with this. So if you didn't hear any of that, you wouldn't even know. He's just intense. So if you see the stories about him, especially when he died and came back to life, did you see that on 30 for 30?
No.
No.
He oh, gosh.
Was it a balloon?
No, that's funny.
Why now? Why here?
Because Clemson played at home this week. He died and was for like 10 minutes and his wife came into the room and they had pronounced him dead and a nurse lady came in and prayed over him.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And hands on him. And like when she leaves, he comes back to life and is saved. And then four other people saw this woman and prayed with their patients that day. And this woman doesn't exist. And they all believe she was an angel.
What?
No, it's a 30 for 30, this legit real story.
Oh, I need to watch it.
Okay,
it's
watch amazing. That.
That's incredible.
And like, Frank Martin came to faith after this. Is that what you...
Yes. He's Catholic, I think, though. Yeah. I think it's a... I think it's a God faith and a Jesus faith, but it's not... I don't think it's an evangelical bent to it. It definitely is not a prevent foul language on the sideline bent.
Right.
It.
It's, but, not, it's not.
But
affecting.
I can get down with that. I'm saying he's a pursue excellence guy, and he is...
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, dude, I mean, that Final Four run's incredible. Yeah. Hmm. So... No knock from me, Frank Martin.
No, it was amazing. It was amazing.
Like you said, we would take a Final Four.
I would take a Final Four. I thought we were going to have a Final Four.
We were 2 points away from the final game, and Sendarius Thornwell got the flu. our 28-point SEC Player of the Year. Y'all had the SEC Player of the Year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Grant Williams 2 years in a row.
Grant Williams. So get to the Final Four, and then Wednesday before the Saturday, Grant Williams gets the flu. Doesn't practice for 3 days. That's what Sendarius Thornwell did.
No good.
I was at the game, and he jogged up and down the floor. He had 12 points. He played kind of hard in the last 3 minutes, but it was sick.
That's no good.
But we were down 14 in the second half. Came back to take the lead with a minute left in the game, and I separated my shoulder, high-fiving a guy when it happened. It's 2 years, and I still need surgery.
Oh, no. So Send your money. We'll do a GoFundMe.
Isn't that...
Send, S-I-N-D, send Darius Thornwell your money. Yeah. Send your money, yep.
Wow.
So we didn't talk about any of this stuff y'all plan to talk about with me, do we?
No, we did. I had some things down, and this is, you know, we flow here.
I do want to just say this. Grant Williams I watched the other night. He had like 16 points.
He's playing great. And summer league. Nine. Summer league's.
But he put that spin move on that dude.
Oh, I
thought,
I
didn't know he could do. In my mind, okay, competition's going to come up.
Right. Well, and his size is going to be a factor. So
the first
far,
time
bro.
He touched the ball, he went up two hands and just. I mean, like he's shown that he had his technique.
What we've known about Grant and Admiral, and we think can they be whatever in the league is. They're going to play hard every play, and they're going to do the intangible things. That's what gives them a shot to be like. I see them as like a PJ Tucker for the Rockets, where it's like they're going to give you their all, and they're going to be like a 10-point a game guy. I don't see them either being all stars.
They're like the eighth man on a championship team.
Yes,
yeah.
Like I see Grant as like almost like Big Baby Davis on that championship team that the Celtics won with the big three. Like I see him as that guy. But he's showing me something. And what's weird is now the whole league's taking notice. My Twitter feed's just littered with stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, and he's perfect in the interview. He's the right kind of guy.
Exactly.
Grant Williams should do a book.
So y'all are in the camp. Y'all are in the camp that the NBA is not like wrestling, that it's not rigged.
Yeah, Marty thinks NBA is rigged.
Well, because they don't run?
Well.
Or they
y'all need to watch some games.
That's an episode. This is
y'all need to watch some
episode.
Games. NBA is a great product.
No,
y'all
just I know
the
NBA.
It has come.
NBA.
It has improved.
The
yes.
current NBA.
Now that Grant Williams is there, John's
right,
on
now
board.
That Grant, my wife is watching Summer League NBA because she's
I'm
such a
root,
huge fan.
Do you understand I'm going to have to root for the Celtics this year? I'm a Lakers fan for life, and I'm going to have to cheer for the Celtics because Grant Williams made the roster. He signed his rookie contract yesterday.
I saw that.
So he officially got his rookie contract.
So, and I was going to ask that. That does mean that he earned his way onto the roster because he wasn't guaranteed a slot even though he got a signing bonus for being a first-rounder, right? So,
but then you play Summer League, and after his Summer League performances, they're like, okay,
so he will absolutely now be in – he'll be on the bench at the real games now, at least.
He'll be there. I think he's going to get –
Williams? I thought all first-rounders made the team.
I did, too.
It's embarrassing.
It's embarrassing
if
you don't
to that organization, not to the player.
Yeah, He was late first round, but it is, yeah. They had another pick before him that they picked was the kind of their guy, their lottery guy. But, yeah, it's still a big deal. And that's what's cool about the NBA, though, is, like, the money is guaranteed, but it also is they limit their rookie contracts. It's only, like, a $2 or $3 million deal, and everybody gets the same rookie deal no matter. So you don't really get into the real money to your second deal. So they play hard, and it's just a thing. But that I'm sure that meant a lot, dude. I mean, that's I don't know what his family situation is, but that's just that's a legacy changing money. It's really cool for him.
It is, and he's in the right kind of guy. And I do attribute a lot of that to Rick Barnes in terms
of
putting
Rick
that work out
there. Fantastic, I mean,
unbelievable coach.
Best thing he ever did was leave Clemson. The, what I'll say the about the Tennessee outraged team him. And the South Carolina team: 22-year-old grown men can go deeper in the tournament. And
yeah.
These one and doneers, the 18-year-olds, the Kentuckys and stuff, I mean, I understand go to the NBA and all that stuff, but the basketball is broken in college.
Like, well, it's when the chemistry flaws are exposed. If you've not played together a long time versus you play a team like Wofford that they're used to chucking the ball around five passes each possession, they find the holes easier. Whereas if you're used to just taking the ball and going up and dunking it, it's just different. You run into somebody goes, well, I'm just going to defend that. They take your best thing away. You don't know what to do.
It does make me mad at Kentucky, though. I will say this. I do think late in the tournament that the five-star matters. It really, really does in terms of especially like SEC. We beat them at least one, if not both games regular season every year. Mm-hmm. Even when our teams aren't that, we almost always take them down because their guys are still figuring out how to play. And then when we meet them in the conference championship game, they're there.
Something's like, clicked.
Something
yeah.
they've now.
Well, they got 25 games under the 18-year-olds.
Well, and Calipari is legit. Calipari is legit.
It makes me mad. And then they did go deeper than us, I think, by one
round.
What
do you mean it makes you mad? Like an entitlement? Like they should not play as hard later in the year?
It makes me mad that talent still trumps like teamwork at a certain level, in my opinion, when they get tired. So again, we all know like Michael Phelps' body is just better in the water. He's made. He breathes differently.
Yeah.
So I think that those elite athletes, the ones that are running faster than everybody else but looks like they're running slower, you know, I think when they get into that moment and our guys have been just working as hard as they can to get everything they can out, we had all three stars.
Right, there's still a ceiling.
We were
so
all three stars.
Huh? You want everybody to you want some wealth redistribution to our
saying,
team.
Well, yeah. We just, by the way, signed. We have a five-star coming in. And
right.
Now the program is allowing that to happen. I'm just saying what makes me mad from a fan standpoint
right.
of the team of three stars that are the guys you want to die for because they worked so hard all year that when it comes down to round two or three in the tournament, that the five-star guys have more energy.
Yeah.
Because you're playing night after night. If you keep winning, the five-star guys have a better opportunity to go up and still keep you know, doing what they do.
Have
in my
more
opinion.
Energy. I don't understand what the being in, but they play in the same number of games.
I'm saying they're physically more gifted, so
yeah,
that in the
right.
that
like
their body holds up,
better.
Their body holds up better after at the end of the season than the three stars.
Well,
body
yeah, when you give
up.
All
that's
you
all
have,
saying.
When you give all you have in your three star,
that's
and it's still not enough.
Thing. That's an interesting thing. I think that that's like, I just think that the five star is just better at the game at that point. I don't feel like it's fatigue, but.
Oh, I feel like there's a physical. I mean, I feel like five star generally is not just skill set.
Five star generally,
the five star Wait. General. No, I mean, again, I'm saying
but
the,
you're right. Like Clowney just moved Ben out of the way.
It's a freak.
Be blocked and
just,
it was awesome.
Yeah.
No, I definitely understand what you're saying. I think that attitude is formed by teams that don't get the five stars.
It absolutely
I think
is.
Immediately
sure.
be like, well, Lattimore's awesome. Clowney's awesome. This is great.
Yeah.
No,
well,
I totally agree. And here's the deal. I'd rather have this last year's team.
They're my favorite team
because
we've ever
they're
had.
My favorite team. Again,
right.
that's the reason
sport.
The reason my wife is watching NBA games right now is because those boys are playing in the games, and we loved those kids.
Right.
We followed them
we're
all
like that
year.
With our South Carolina
yeah,
guys.
Love them.
But I'd rather have five stars with work ethic.
Can we not have both?
Right? Yeah. How do you get both? That's the thing. That's true of any walk of life, be it preachers or comedians or football players.
Like Johnny's a five-star comedian
players.
That doesn't work at all at it.
Right, yeah. exactly.
He's just like every now and then writes a finished joke. Right.
Coasting, bro.
And you know what, listener? We're like a three-star podcast, but we work really hard.
We grind.
You know what I'm saying?
We know
I appreciate you listening.
Yes.
Is that why you got fatigued during my thing here?
We're trying to segue to the close, Marty. Jeez. Yeah, we're fatigued.
We were
now.
Very fatigued by Marty. Actually, we really enjoyed having Marty today, and thank you for being on the podcast. And we know you're going to share this, as our listeners are, with all of your thousands of followers so that they, too, can listen and share with their friends.
I will guarantee you 12 to 17 likes on every post
thank
that
you.
I share on it.
Beautiful.
That's going to be amazing. And that's 12 to 17 more people that pushed a button on Facebook. I mean, so whatever that, we don't really know how that translates into effectiveness in this line. But we did enjoy, and we do want you to share and to make sure that...
leave a review, subscribe,
yeah, leave a review,
et cetera.
We do our Ask John and Johnny, or as Johnny calls it, Ask Johnny.
Ask Johnny.
Section. Mm-hmm. So you can send questions to us via a multiplicity of avenues and platforms, all kinds of ways. Twitter, you can follow Johnny at Johnny with an IE underscore W.
Yeah.
Dude, could something a little easier?
Johnny W was already taken, and the guy's got 4 followers, and it's infuriating.
Gotcha.
His photo's an egg. It's a whole thing.
And or me, John underscore driver.
Why are you underscore? You're going to pick on me?
Because John driver's already taken, too. Yeah, so... And I am not the Mennonite theologian, by the way, who writes the other books.
Wait
so
a minute.
That happens a lot. People want to know.
I want to do a Mennonite podcast.
I'm also not that guy.
No.
Yeah. Marty's also not the Mennonite theologian named John Driver. But yeah.
Correct. So,
exactly. But we do appreciate you listening. Leave us that review.
I'm at Marty Simpson, if that matters.
At Marty Simpson. MartySimpson.com.
We just totally skipped Marty.
Tour date.
With no underscore, I'd like to say.
No underscore. You can find tour dates. Marty's always traveling,
guys,
doing shows.
Don't go look up Marty. Don't look him up. Whatever
look at his
do.
Clips. He's hilarious. And you can you can watch his special on Amazon.
Ooh, nice.
Amazon Prime. Yeah.
Marty is hilarious.
I am also not the 4th place finisher on Australian Idol. In 2007, Marty Simpson.
Oh, right. There is that guy.
Yeah, they offered $10,000 for the .com. I was like, what? No.
Wow.
No, don't give up. Don't sell your soul.
$10,000.
Yeah, $10,000 is a lot of money.
7 or 8 years ago.
You could pay that to me to write your
book.
So.
Yeah, but I didn't pay it to them. So I gave them the same deal I offered you.
Marty is hilarious, and you should go check out all of his stuff. Go through the archives. Go through all of Marty's
stuff. Go take a deep dive into Marty.
Absolutely.
If you will.
Absolutely. But next time, we'll be talking about more things that matter and more things that are fun.
And that don't matter.
All right, we'll see you next time here on
Talk About That.
I'm Dr. Lauren DeVille, a practicing naturopathic physician in Tucson, Arizona. In my podcast, Christian Natural Health, my guests and I discuss topics ranging from nutrition, sleep, hormone balancing, and exercise to specific health concerns like hair loss, anxiety, and hypothyroidism. I'll also interweave biblical principles as they apply throughout the podcast because true health is body, mind, and spirit. Listen to Christian Natural Health for free at lifeaudio.com or on your favorite podcast platform.